The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor, a professional writer, and a priest of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. His website is russjournal.com. That's russjournal.com. Now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. And today we're going to go back to a topic that we dealt with very early on in this program's life. And we're going to deal with a man that I identify with in terms of his basic theory of metaphysics and of mankind. And that is Grigory Skovoroda of late 18th century Ukraine. I think that Skovoroda is basically correct in his approach to the world, and especially his approach to metaphysics. Skovoroda is a relatively simple writer to read and to grasp. He doesn't write in systematic treatises, and we have dealt with him before, but we're going to go further on this program. And on this particular program's page, you'll see that you can go back and listen to the initial talk that I had on Skovoroda a couple years ago, and then also to listen to this one, and to see how much further we go, and how much detail we deal with him. I think that Skovoroda is really important because he solves a lot of problems in contemporary metaphysics. He deals with a lot of things in a very simple and straightforward way. And that is completely very close to, and in fact identical with, the ancient patristic tradition on our relationship with the spiritual world. So, on this first half here, I'm going to make 14 points. And then in the second half, I'm going to expand on that. Grigory Skovoroda is a metaphysician and a moral philosopher who is largely ignored in the Western world, and yet that's a very bad thing. His primary proposition, from which all other things take their origin, number one, is that all nature is dual. Every object, everything in the natural world has a material side and a spiritual side. The material side is that which we immediately perceive, and yet underlying everything is its spiritual nature, like a shadow. Number two, the spirit then is behind everything. It is the ground of all things. It is the logos. It is not only the ontological ground of all things, but it is also the activity and the purpose behind all things. Point number three, matter is something that's necessary. We are beings that are encased in matter. Matter is not in and of itself evil, but from a purely ontological point of view, it's inferior to the spirit. The spirit is a unity. Matter is multiplicity, is chaos, or at least chaotic. But matter does something, and that it points beyond itself. Matter points to the spiritual world, and in fact, material things are symbols. And symbols pointing beyond themselves is something very important to Skovoroda's thinking. So number four, all objects, therefore, are part of a large cosmological system. And you see this in Spinoza, a man that I admire very much, that underlying spiritual reality is infinite, is non-material, at least in and of itself. is pure spirit and therefore pure freedom. If freedom exists, then spirit exists. Dostoevsky says that, Gogol says that, the ancient patristic tradition says that. So that means, number five, we have a choice. Whether we insist on taking matter as all that there is, and therefore living only relative to appearances, or we choose the world of the spirit, logos, of substance. That's the basis of everything in Skovoroda. The existence of the spirit, as I've said many times before, is proven by the fact that we have free will. If we have a will and that will is free, therefore it must be spirit. If it was material, it would be subject to cause and effect, like any other thing, and therefore would not be free, and we would have no consciousness of the ability to make a choice. And yet choice is central here. We can live in this fallen world of cause and effect. The material things that draw on our passions, we want to control these things, we want to dominate these things, we live in that vulgar world, or we work through ascetic labor to live in the world of the spirit. The fact that we have a free will shows to us almost immediately that we have that choice. Skovoroda, number six, holds that modernity is the problem. He calls enlightenment, the Western Enlightenment, and of course he's living right in the midst of it, being heavily influenced by Poland and Ukraine. Of course, Skovoroda was a wanderer. He lived in Germany for a while. He was really very close to a lot of the major philosophical currents of the time, Spinoza included. But modernity is based on the idea that appearance, matter, is the only reality. Although, of course, that can't explain consciousness, because our consciousness and freedom, which we have an immediate connection with, can't be explained by matter. Matter does not have freedom and therefore cannot give what it does not have. But to organize social life purely around the concept of appearance leads to capitalism, socialism, radical individualism, and the worship of technology and the domination of nature, the state, and other human beings. So what does that mean? Point number seven, Skovoroda holds that we have to live simply, we have to live ascetically, and we have to live a life of self-denial. That's because, given our fallen and perverted state, we have to work towards liberating our spirit from that world of cause and effect. And that's something that Christ's incarnation has been able to give us, and why the Council of Chalcedon in the ancient world was so important in the Orthodox world. The human and the divine are not one thing. They work together in cooperation. Matter and spirit are not identical. They must work in cooperation. They are not identical, and yet they are not opposites. They are counterparts one to another. Point number eight. This is an important idea. We have a direct, immediate, and intimate perception of our own consciousness and freedom. No matter what political point of view or epistemological point of view you have, you can't deny that simple thing. We are intimately and immediately aware that we are conscious, and therefore we can make choices amongst various things in the world. That means that humanity has a spiritual side to it. That which is not material, that which is not, at least in and of itself, subject to cause and effect. It's a concept I've dealt with on this show many times and is central to everything I think and everything that Scovadora thinks, because probably no one more than Scovadora has influenced me in terms of metaphysics and epistemology. So we recognize self-consciousness before we recognize anything else. We recognize the fact that we are alive and that we can choose and that we can deliberate before anything else. Therefore, there is a spiritual element, the soul, in humanity. And the problem is that the material world cannot satisfy that material world. Only a spiritual element can satisfy our spiritual element. And that's ultimately where Scovadora and many others in that tradition deduce the existence of the spiritual underpinning of all purely material things. And I think in that particular respect, Scovadora is close to Spinoza. Spinoza is someone who I've been reading for a long time. It is very, very difficult for the non-professional to grasp because his writing is extremely dense. He was a Sephardic Jew who was removed from Spain by the monarchy and settled in the Netherlands. And in his writings, he said very positive things about Jesus Christ and his mission in the world. And as a result of that, he was excommunicated from his synagogue in Amsterdam. And as a result, he became an outcast in the Jewish community. And clearly rejected the Talmud. And he developed his metaphysical system of the infinite immaterial substance, which creates from itself, from its own nature, both our thinking and the objects in nature and the interrelationships between those two things. Freedom for Spinoza is a little different than freedom for Scovadora, because freedom for Spinoza isn't so much this abstract sense of choosing between different alternatives. It's more that we are a part of the unfolding of the spirit's nature. The underlying spiritual reality of all things is continuously moving and changing and developing, and we are a part of that, and therefore our thoughts reflect the very nature of spirit sort of unpacking itself over time. Scovadora, though, is different. I mean, he wants to say that human consciousness is known by one thing, the fact that it is not determined unless we choose to make it so. Point number 9 for Scovadora, freedom is everything. This idea that because we are aware of our consciousness, we are aware of that immateriality, we are therefore aware that we can choose the world of the spirit, or we can choose the world of matter. So what does that mean? Point number 10 is that our inner person, the heart, Scovadora says, has two elements. When he says the heart, he's not referring to the organ. He's referring to our center. He's not just talking about the mind. He's not just talking about the body. He's not just talking about our culture and the context and our language. He's talking about the nodal connection of all of those things taken together. But there are two sides to this. The outer side is that wants to dominate and possess nature through technology, through capitalism, through socialism, through the state. And yet that is not the way of freedom. That is the way of slavery to the material world, to simple cause and effect. If you choose that world, you destroy your own freedom and you simply become a part of this material world, completely determined, and you are then controlled by your passions, your greed, your lust, your anger, your jealousy. All of this derives from this obsession with domination and control over nature. And yet there is the inner man, there is the inner heart that is the source of spirit, of freedom, the source of our own consciousness. The logos, in a certain sense, is present there as well. Point number 11, when an Orthodox person is baptized and chrismated, that logos is, so to speak, activated. You're brought into the very expression of the logos in that church. And that is how you begin your ascetic life, to try to live within the non-material side of the universe at the expense of the material side of the universe. And therefore, asceticism, self-denial, is necessary for freedom. If that's true, then self-gratification leads to slavery, because it leads to dependence, both economic and psychological dependence, on the external world, social life, the economic system, governments, whatever it happens to be. And I find that particular understanding of our personhood, of our selfhood, connected to his understanding of metaphysics, or the ontological structure of the universe and the world in which we live, to be extremely important, to be very satisfying, and to a great extent, very difficult to argue with. I've always felt sorry for materialists because, number one, they can't make sense out of consciousness, and number two, they can't make sense out of their own freedom. They have experience in choosing among various options in many important times in their life, and yet if all is simple material and the development of that material, then they're not really choosing at all. It is simple instinct, no different than a cat or a bear. So they can't make any sense out of these central interior parts of human life. So, we are free to the extent that we insist on controlling our desires so as we are not dependent on the external world. The external world in the sense of its material construction. Well, the last two points have to do with what this means in terms of our day-to-day life. Scovarota has an interesting idea of economics, and it comes directly from this concept of the heart, or this inner selfhood. He says that the spiritual life is essentially one amongst all objects in nature, including human beings. It is predetermined, so to speak, that every element in social life has its place. That place is defined by Scovarota as a vocation. That internally, in our spiritual, our consciousness, as deep as you can go into yourself, where you could actually experience freedom as such, there is this leaning. You lean towards a certain purpose. You are going to be a doctor or a writer or a scholar or a farmer. And that you have this bent that otherwise can't be explained. We know that it exists. And our happiness is based on following that, regardless of the consequences. Our personal happiness derives from finding our place in the social whole, where we can pursue our particular vocation. And at the time, that was fairly radical. It's not the economic system that decides this for you. It's not the market. It's not the state. And yet, in all modern societies, that is how it's organized. No, it's this internal personhood. You discover what you are here for. You don't invent it. You find it. This is part of the logos, God, the spiritual substance, that is the underlying foundation of all things, this imminent presence of the Spirit. It does communicate with you. Now, you could be one of these people who refuses to live the life of the Spirit and simply does whatever he's told. This is the slave. This is the conformist. This is your typical American journalist or academic. This is your average mass man who doesn't think deeply, who cannot think deeply, and who is so dumbed down that he really can't comprehend what his purpose is. But for those who are sensitive enough, you look inside and you say to yourself, what am I here for? And then you do whatever is necessary to live that life. So, here's the concept. To summarize this stuff, the material world exists to point to and to symbolize the spiritual fundament of all things. We know that the spiritual fundament is there because we are conscious beings. If we are conscious beings, we are free beings, and if we are free beings, we cannot be a part of this natural cause and effect. And therefore, that freedom can never be satisfied with merely inserting yourself into the world of cause and effect. Matter cannot satisfy spirit. Spirit can satisfy spirit. Spinoza's substance is, in fact, the Logos. It is the spiritual light that undergirds all things and that dictates its vitality and activity. That is what we mean in our human life as our vocation. So unlike Spinoza, Scovoroda is saying that there is this underlying spiritual fundament, but it is also a personality. It is a functioning, acting divinity. It is the Logos itself. It is our purpose. It is the energy that motivates us. And our misery is when we surrender to the system as it stands, especially in its enlightenment method of organization, whether it be capitalism or socialism or some mix. The problem that most of humanity has is that because we are fallen, and that fallenness is that we live and are satisfied in this world of material cause and effect, and those who control the big capitalists in the state, who control that cause and effect, that is alienation, that is our fallenness, and that is, as a result, our misery. So when you think of it that way, Scovoroda is without a doubt a social revolutionary, because he's saying that those who control the system, those who manipulate matter and people and institutions through technology and the scientific establishment that they pay, these are destroying your humanity because they're insisting that you not follow that inner heart, as Scovoroda says, but simply treats you as a tool and places you in the broader context of its control and its domination. And that is ultimately materialistic in the metaphysical, ontological, and economic sense of the word. Okay, we're going to take a break now. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Hang in there.
Don't go away, because there's more to come on the Orthodox Nationalist. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. Return to the Orthodox Nationalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
Okay, welcome back to the Orthodox Nationalist. We are talking about the little-studied Ukrainian philosopher Gregory Scovoroda. We've dealt with him on this program before. And we are really talking about the way that this has turned out. We are talking about how his social ideas are, in fact, revolutionary, and why the real idealist, in the sense that Skovodoro was, is the only real revolutionary in modern society. For him, the Enlightenment was a great error in Europe because it almost deified matter and those who are capable of controlling matter, which is another way of saying those people who have access to the means of production and therefore control the society as a whole. The fact that these people, the elites in economics and politics and media, control everything and control, therefore, how we work and where we work and what the market or the state dictates, what sort of job we're to have and what sort of function we're to have, if we're to survive and make money, he will then call this system the beast in the theological sense and the beast in the sense of Hobbes' Leviathan. As a result of all of this, like me, like E. Michael Jones, he lost his university position in Ukraine, where he taught poetry. He believes that the monastic calling is the highest because it places our consciousness in connection with the spirit, rejecting that of matter. Or at least, if not rejecting it, putting it in its much, much lower place. Now, when I say monastic, I'm not necessarily saying living in a monastery, because Skovodoro had considered this briefly and rejected it because it would harm his scholarship, at least in his view. He really means this outlook on life that you can adopt regardless of your particular circumstances. But making these distinctions is the central purpose of philosophy. When he talks about material things, he's talking about not only their existence as just matter and energy, he's talking about the fact that they have a certain pull on our will, on our intellect. We want things, whether it be money or a good reputation or power or a woman or something like that, and we wish to dominate them and consume them, so to speak, for our own gratification. That is what he means by the world. That is normally, in the monastic literature, what is meant by the world. The world is a system of power that operates not on your reason, but it operates on your passions, on your desire to control and to dominate things. And yet Skovodoro did live somewhat of a monastic life, because he really, like me, I guess, really thrived in isolation, in the life more or less of the hermit. For Skovodoro, the world of substance, or the world of the spirit of divinity, as it relates to us, is the single spiritual world, very similar to Spinoza's substance, that creates multiplicity. Multiplicity, the material world, comes from it. Spirit creates matter, not the other way around. But spirit creates matter relative to us as human beings, because in our fallenness and the domination of our passions and our lusts in the world, this is what we see. The multiplicity of objects and their pull, their control in some cases, over our will. This is the perversion. He's not talking about the negation of matter. He's talking about the realization of the primacy of the spirit, which then puts material things in their place. So if we live a life according to our vocation, we sacrifice everything for that. Material things like a good salary or a good reputation, these are inferior to the spiritual goal of following our conscious freedom in contributing to the whole. And I, you know, in my life as a critic and a scholar in these things, I'm doing the exact same thing. And this is why when I discovered Skovodoro, I became very attracted to this point of view. because the idea is to negate the more or less easy rewards of society and instead follow what it is you're really supposed to be doing. Not what the regime says you should be doing. Like our consciousness, the substantial foundation of the world is spirit and it's unified. It is a singular divine nature. This is not pantheism. I don't even think Spinoza was a pantheist. It's simply to say that it is the fingerprint of the divine creation. It's the divine energy manifest in the spiritual unity that holds all things together. In modern language, we may call that a large ecosystem. All objects are held together in this energetic connection. We might call them different natural laws, whatever you want to call it. The fact is that when we watch these natural laws in action, we're not seeing the law. The law itself is immaterial. It is part of the substance of the universe. He often makes reference to Christ's life and the life of the prophets before him because none of these people wanted worldly power. Satan tempted Christ with worldly power, and Christ rejected it. The prophets in the Old Testament, even people like Isaiah, who were of the aristocratic class, did not pursue worldly power, even though they had it or could have had it. Those who conformed themselves to the system, the so-called temple prophets or the Pharisees, these people had the reward of the system. They had their reward right then and there. Christ came to show us how we're supposed to live, and Scovid ought to live this life in almost every detail. It's based on the rejection of worldly power, which itself is the following of free vocation in the midst of this determined, dominated material world that ultimately wants to make a cog out of you in their great machine. That was the case with the prophets. It was the case with Christ. It was the case with anybody who follows this inner spiritual light, which is Logos. What is the point of all of it? The point of this vision of the spiritual life is to repair the being that at least appears to us in our sinful state as fallen and perverted. The perversion, the inversion of the natural world is to create scientific or political or economic theories that have matter as their basis. And matter is divinity. Because regardless of whether you read Darwin or Hobbes or Marx or Feuerbach, they have this concept that it's matter and material things and matter alone that has created consciousness or freedom. And I can't make any sense out of that because matter is by its very structure unfree and completely determined. Our job, it's people who hold the central idea of the substantial spirit that underlies and connects all things. Our job is to make that the primary ontological center of any social life, whether it be our personal life, our family, or wherever we are. This is the central idea, and vocation is that spiritual semi-economic concept of Scovid Ora that connects our human will to this world of substance. We will suffer, however. We will suffer as he suffered, as so many who followed this path have suffered. So, think of it this way. Our present universe, our present situation, can be divided in two ways. You have the underlying spiritual substance that then creates multiplicity. Those modes of being that we see outside of us that make up the objects of nature. Substance is the real underlying element. The multiplicity of material things are relatively unreal in that they derive, in a sense, from our fallen will. And that fallen will seeks satisfaction in material things and the imagined pleasures that we're going to get from it. But as Plato says, those pleasures don't make any sense because, number one, they're always mixed with pain. And number two, they always go away. People with money are never satisfied with what they have. They always want more. That's not how the human mind works. That willful desire to possess is never satisfied. It, by its nature, is never satisfied. And therefore, organizing your life around that principle like modernity does is, again, by its very structure, incoherent and irrational. So the two worlds that exist are, number one, the life of the spirit, the life of freedom, the life which is not and cannot be determined by any outside force except that of our own will. Number two, the system as a whole, the material world, the control of bureaucracies and establishments, whether they be political or religious or economic. Bureaucracies and these establishments, these institutions live and depend on this fallen material world, and they, if not completely rejected, have to be put in their place as inferior goods, or the life of the spirit and freedom are the supreme goods and are immaterial, and if they are immaterial, they do not change. Truth is truth, but truth is not a material thing. It is, at most, the correspondence with the material thing to the underlying spiritual reality. The world lives solely in, by, and from appearance. These objects, as nominalism says, are taken as entities in and of themselves. That's all that exists, and therefore the control over their domination and production is the only real purpose of human life. And that is the source of this alienation, because our consciousness, no matter how much we try to deny it, our consciousness will never be satisfied with purely material goods. It's not to say that they're not goods. They are. They're just inferior goods to that of the spirit. The Orthodox vision here is very important, because it comes down, as I've said many times on this show, to the Synod of Chalcedon in 451. The synod that, through many, many decades of debate, came to the understanding that the person of Christ, though a unified single individual, contained within himself two natures. Those two natures are exactly what Scovedora is talking about. The material nature or human nature and the divine nature or the spiritual world. The fact that Christ was a single person showed that those two entities and the two wills that come from those two entities are complementary. They exist in cooperation, and in a perfect, sinless life, they never contradict. Now, of course, we can't say that because we don't live perfect, sinless lives. They do contradict. And the real problem is that in our state, the world of matter and money and all the glitter and everything else, it appears so much more vivid and present and powerful than the more rarefied world of the spirit. And the miracle is how anyone chooses the spiritual world. especially in our postmodern age, where if you have the money, you could engage in all kinds of pleasures that the ancients couldn't possibly have dreamed about. And yet so many have traded that for the life, more or less, of the somber monastic struggle. And the only explanation for why they have done this, including giving away all kinds of money and property, is because they realize in some way, maybe they can't articulate it, but in some way they realize that those pleasures offered by the world are ultimately illusory because they're never satisfactory. The very fact that we are conscious beings means that we are free beings, and that means that the material world, however it might be organized, number one, could never be perfect. Number two, will always resist our attempts to dominate it. And number three, is always changing. And therefore, the pleasures that we receive usually very quickly go away, and then we need to redo it and redo it and redo it. And things like addiction, and I'm not saying just, you know, alcohol and drugs, but addiction to all sorts of things. Addiction to the television, addiction to pornography, addiction to all of these kind of things is the result of that constant drive to possess and to dominate a nature that is itself fallen and always resists our attempts to dominate it. Appearance, the material world, does speak to us in the sense that it is a symbol of that which underlies it. Symbols are important, and they were very important in the ancient world. And symbolism was always important to the ancient world and all of these civilizations because they had some vague metaphysical notion that there was something more than just what appeared to be these random interactions of human beings, this existential thrownness into the world. There's got to be something more to that. If there isn't, then the existentialists are right. And our life is purposeless, and we're simply waiting for death. But this underlying spiritual thing that corresponded with their free will and their consciousness is Logos, is the second person in the Trinity, but they did not know him, they knew him only vaguely. Even for Scovedora, the Bible itself and the ancient writings of the church, these also are symbols all pointing to the same experience with this underlying spiritual fundament. Scovedora's view of the Bible was very, very simple, and the same thing for the church and the sacraments and everything else. They were material things and part of the material world. In and of itself, that's not a problem, so long as we understand what they are pointing to. The icons and the incense and the prayers and the saints and the books of the Bible and all of this stuff only makes sense if we are cognizant, first and foremost, of the underlying spiritual world that they are always pointing to. And the uniqueness of Christ in the sense that he has encapsulated in himself both natures. Our fallen human nature, which he has made perfect, and the divine nature, which of course is himself intrinsically. And therefore, the proper understanding of Christ from Chalcedon and the church, which is the Orthodox Church, which had created it and developed it, we have the privileged position of understanding the nature of that reality through a very, very specific individual life, a life which scandalized almost everybody. Christ's crucifixion, his humiliation, that they made fun of him and they dressed him up in crazy robes and they beat him up, this was proof. I mean, both in the pagan Roman and in the Jewish point of view at the time, it was proof that Christ was a fraud. Only the small group of people following him recognized the truth that underlied all that. Because both in the Jewish and in the pagan idea, it was strength and power and domination and rebellion
and armies and bureaucracies and states and governments and money and cash and influence, this is what showed you to be good and strong. And yet Christ rejected all of it and therefore alienated everyone around him. One of the reasons we know that our accounts of Christ in biblical and extra-biblical sources is true, it's true because he flaunted all of the conventions of his age. He flaunted the Jewish and Roman obsession with strength and power by getting himself crucified, getting himself beaten up and humiliated in public, which of course back then was the most horrible thing it could ever have done to you. It showed you to be the lowest of the low, and yet this is God himself going through that to provide us with the example of, number one, how we're to live. Number two, how do we live freely and perfectly? Number three, what's going to happen to us when we do this? And number four, what to expect from this kind of life? So I want to conclude here, but I know this has been a fairly abstract talk, and yet I want to say to you that Gregory Scovedora is correct. And of all the major figures in the history of philosophy, Scovedora got it right. He encapsulated this concept in a very, in relatively simple terms. Or people like Hegel and Spinoza were very difficult for the layman to read. A layman can read Scovedora and make a lot of sense out of him. And I think he speaks to our desire for true, genuine freedom, which is something very different from this obsession with being able to do whatever we want, which usually means to follow our desires wherever they lead us. That is not what freedom is. In fact, it's the opposite of freedom. It is slavery and dependency on the external world. Scovedora is one of the greatest minds in Slavic history. And as someone I hope some of these programs will inspire amongst those of you who are sensitive to this point of view, who are opposed to the New World Order, which is pure materialism and the dominance of oligarchy. I mean, Scovedora is the archetypal attack on oligarchy at its very root, what makes oligarchy and the New World Order function. That's why he's useful, and I hope that some of you look him up and get deeper into what this man had to say. It can change your life. I thank you for listening, and I will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Nationalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.